seeking to test her capacity to keep the status quo in place and strengthen it.
Well, as you probably know, this is the golden era of cosmology because there's so many exciting experiments regarding how the microwave background, large scale structure of the universe, observations. So, cosmology, it's a very vibrant field. And string theory, on the other hand, is suffering from the fact that it's very difficult to test experiments. So, actually, string theorists would like to see whether we can use the universe as a laboratory. And that's the hope in constructing a string theoretic model of inflation. So I'm going to be talking about a few words. I'll give a little bit of background on this AKLT, MMT scenario in which I'm working, and then I'll talk about an attempt to make this a realistic scenario by incorporating the standard model. And then I'll briefly discuss a related word that we call racetrack inflation. Burgess, or Stoica, and Vedo, and the second one is this long list of authors. Finally, the last 2 minutes, I'm going to talk briefly about the problem of reheating after grain anti-grain inflation. And that's based on papers with students, including Leo Barnaby, just recently. Well, the basic picture is nice, simple, and appealing. The idea that new elements from string theory are grains and anti-grains, which track each other. And we can use this potential describing their attraction, hopefully, as a source of inflation. And when the grains annihilate, that should naturally produce lots of radiation and give us heating. So that's the naive picture, which looks very nice. But the difficulty now is when you try to make that come out of the actual mathematics. And there were some problems with this picture when it was initially attempted to put into practice. And that is this potential starting force between the grains is not generically flat. And so people had to try some tricks to flatten it out, such as having the grains at very small angles, or starting the grains out at special places in the extra dimensions. But probably a more serious problem is that all these early attempts ignored the fact that there are lots of other moduli besides the grain anti-grain separation. And people always just assume that those were fixed and were kind of orthogonal to the modulus we were interested in. So, first of all, the fact that 4 years ago, there weren't any very appealing ideas for how to fix the moduli. That was rather unpleasant. The other problem is there's this inherent or generic danger that once you fix them, that actually mixes with the grain anti-grain separation. And so your stabilization of the moduli tends to make that other modulus that you wanted to be very light actually heavy. So you ruin the flatness. We'll see that indeed that happens in the most recent incarnations of grain anti-grain inflation. But at least now we have what looks like a nice idea for fixing the moduli. That was coming from Giddens, Hatchew, Shinsky, who realized that if you induce or introduce fluxes, loan, and new sports fields on different pool cycles and a lot of yellow pool. That stabilizes all but one of the moduli. It stabilizes the stabiliton, the complex structure, and it only leaves the overall helium modulus volume unfixed. And it also has a nice feature of if you chose these fluxes to be parametrically one larger than the other, they're quantized. So suppose one of these fluxes is 10 times bigger than the other. That induces a strong warping of Flavio if you do these throats, which are nice. I'll amend the center to give you another way of addressing the hierarchy problem. Yes, and the warping, it depends exponentially on those fluxes. So you don't need a very big hierarchy of fluxes to get an exponentially large form factor. Well, then KKLT came along and figured out a way to use this construction to get the Sitter space in string theory, which was the first step toward inflation. Because for a long while, people were saying Sitter space and string theory are incompatible. It's very difficult to get the Sitter backgrounds in string theory. And so, what these authors did was, first of all, figure out a way of stabilizing this last volume modulus, which we know in T, the Euler modulus. And they assume that there's some non-perturbative effect, a genome condensation, which incidentally, one needed these seven grains wrapping some cycles of Laveau in order to get this GKT construction. And they provide a natural place for the genome condensation, giving a non-perturbative contribution to the superpotential. So here's the piece that GKT already had. That's the one that's responsible for stabilizing the complex structure. And here's the new piece, GKLT. And okay, so that by itself is nice. It stabilizes the Taylor modulus, but unfortunately, it always stabilizes at a negative value of the potential. So far, you're just anti-de-Sitter space, not the Sitter. The other new element was to introduce some anti-D3 rings into the Laveau space. And those like to sink to the bottom of any throat that's there. That minimizes their energy. But nevertheless, that gives you a positive contribution to the overall energy, which depends on Laveau work factor. It depends on the Euler modulus work factor. And so it gives you an additional positive contribution to the total potential. This is a supergravity piece plus anti-grain contribution that brings supersymmetry. And that allows you to raise up the potential for positive energy. So at least they got the Sitter space. Now the final pitch, final ingredient is how do you go from just static Sitter space to inflation, or eventually Sitter space relaxes to Kalski space. And so KKLMMC took the KKLT picture, and they said, let's add a mobile free ring, which if I hadn't had this stabilization for the overall volume, then that D3 grain would have been just break supersymmetry. It would have been free to loop around sitter in the Laveau. So that's a flat direction except due to the presence of the anti-grain, there's a Coulomb traction. So there is your potential for inflation. And the fact that the anti-D3 grain tension is is strongly warped by being at the bottom of this road that's exponentially suppressed, can make the interaction between the brain and the anti-brain exponentially small. But if you natural wave have a flat computation, which you need for slow rolling and sufficient inflation. So that was the good side. But the bad side is, of course, you still do have to stabilize Taylor modulus. And when you do that, that indeed that spoils all the flatness that you managed to achieve for this inclinon potential. And I'll show you in a moment why that happens. Well, so where we came in was we wanted to do more detailed investigation of inflation in this scenario. And we also wanted to make it more realistic, because the picture I showed you so far makes no mention of the standard model. And to have a realistic theory, you need to add a little bit more. You need to have something that will allow for chiral matter. And so one way, which has been discussed by various authors, is to introduce some Zn orbital symmetry. And if you put the brains in fixed points, these are singular points, those are places which allow for chiral matter. And so our standard model could be sitting at one of those same fixed points. And associated with these singular points, there's their extra moduli called blowing up modes given by PCI. And so apparently one has to produce an extra modulus for each one of those singular points. So, so now we're looking at a theory which is a bit more complicated. To keep it more practical, we're going to just ignore except one of the going out modes and see if it gives us anything qualitatively different.
Can you explain a little bit more of this picture that I'm looking at? I mean, I used to think that gray thing was just explained in my face.
Right.
So now you cross it with a four door. I mean, where is the four door somehow living inside of that?
Four torus is supposed to be sitting at the bottom of the throat.
So it's a subspace.
Yeah, it's a four-dimensional subspace located on somehow.
So in some consumer questions, that is something for the four with some different connected to the
ground. Yeah. Four, six. Sorry, I don't have the very.
Is it a toy model or
this? Well,
I mean, is it a real application? Or I'm used to thinking that there's S3 cross S2, you know, I'm calling on the cross with throat.
I'm afraid I don't know. I have to refer you to this literature. The theoretical part is not my strong suit, so I pay more attention to the.
And is a D3 brain, or an anti-D3 brain still hanging around at one of these points?
Well, it's an anti-D3 brain is still has to be the bottom of the attractive global rebrain.
Right.
But
somehow it's not annihilated against the standard model, right? So.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay. It's not. Okay. In the end, actually, this complication is not going to play a major role. And I think
But just the foreign forest is living at the very bottom where the Yankee City lives, right? And somehow it's not, we're not violating each other by any mechanism of the animal. That is the basic picture, right?
That's the basic issue. I'm sorry, I'm the wrong person to ask whether that's justified. But, to me, I think the more the direct motivation for what we've done is just to do a detailed investigation of inflation in this KKL scenario. Because what we find eventually is that this extra modulus doesn't play a very important role. And I think qualitatively, inflation, it was more complicated theory is qualitatively the same as in the simple KKLMT theory. But we've done here a much more quantitative analysis of how inflation happens in that problem. And here is the potential that we have to deal with. It's got three complex fields in it. One is the inflaton, brain anti-brain separation. So that's, think of that as a complex coordinate. It's complex. And in fact, three coordinates, but we're just looking at your combination of these distance. And then there's the Calabi-Yau, the Taylor modulus, which has real parts and an axial, just pulling up mode, which is a real part of it's an axial piece. All of these imaginary parts turn out to be unimportant because the potential is such that they just want to go to the bottom of the potential. So in the end, we're able to ignore all of these and just look at the evolution of the real parts. And in fact, the real part of the blowing up mode, it has a big mass too, and so it wants to settle down to the bottom of its potential. And so at the end of the day, it's really the inflaton and the Taylor modulus which are more interesting fields. So the potential comes from an F term, which is the symmetric part, which is this complicated thing. There's a new contribution due to this blowing up mode, which is a D term. So it has gauge interactions. So you get this extra piece that looks like cosmological constants. Then the other piece that we're already present, the anti-brain tension and the interaction. And I think K prime looks positive attribute minus. So this is the track direction. Now, the thing that I told you spoils the flatness of the inflaton potential has to do with this linear combination. You see the Taylor function, Taylor potential. It would have just been this if I didn't have the free grain of the picture. And it turns out that once you have free grain, it becomes a non-trivial function. It's not just log of rho plus log of something involving grain. It's log of this linear combination, which you can, like Taylor transformations, you can always bring it into a form which looks like quadratic piece plus higher order pieces. And we're just going to ignore these and focus on small evolution of field space. And this linear combination called R turns out to be the actual volume on this for the Calabi-Yau. It's not rho, but once you introduce the free brain, it's this linear combination. And clever string theorists explain explain why it has to be that way, but I can't reproduce that argument for you. Because anyway, that's the thing which screws up flatness of the potential, because before we had stabilization of the Cayley potential, all this stuff in here was vanishing. So then you would only have this piece, the Coulomb interaction, and that you could argue could be flat. But once you introduce stabilization of Cayley modulus, and you have these psi dependents coming through e to the k factor potential, well, that gives you a large mass contribution to the mass of psi, which is of order the potential itself, which is of order Hubble parameter square. But for inflation, we needed this mass to be much less than h squared. So there's contradiction there. The only way to get out of this in this scenario is to now try to do some tuning between this piece and the side of the fence that's coming in here. We have to do some fine tuning now to make this mass sufficiently small. We can't just use the warping.
Just to clarify, B and beta are strong. Do we cover what the other KK, L, and T?
Right? Yeah, that's right. If I set B to zero, and
does that mean what you guys did is just tired of going on mode, right?
That's right. So I think that's true.
You kill B, kill beta, and some of that stuff in white doesn't seem to vanish.
Yeah, and this part is C as far as I'm going.
So C is filled through.
Yeah. So then it does become quite big.
There were all these other motives. I think I'm all the engineering parts. What characterizes there? Is it just string scale? Or is it?
Yeah. Yes. It's just string scale, or if it's. I think it's basically the same scale as. There's nothing making this small. So I think it is just
basic. But I think the psi math, if I remember right, the psi math is down by the convention. We have all the parameters.
I think that one applies to these because so this is the F term. And it doesn't care whether there was a throat there. The terms that get warp factors are the ones that are associated with the throat. So that gets a warp factor. In fact, these two terms, they get warp factors. But I believe this is just for the bulk. So now I'm saying the two important moduli are the Cayley modulus of Pauli sigma, the main separation, and Pauli psi. And this, if you look at the cross section for sigma, it's basically the picture I showed you from KKLSD. It's this kind of racetrack looking potential. So what we've done is we've just added an extra dimension to this picture, and that's going to turn this local minimum into some kind of a trough. To get inflation, we'd like this to be really a trough, but to numerically, it's not. Because of this behavior, this depends on the side we like to make the potential turn it up. And you see that happening, it's tending to turn up. But we have a heating dependence from the Coulomb potential light escape problem. So sign up represents the bottom position at the bottom of the throat. That's where the brain wants to end up. So it's basically the competition between these two pieces that you're seeing here. And if you don't tune things just right, either you will get a first term winning, so you end up with a local minimum, so you're stuck there deflating forever. Or if the Coulomb term is dominating, then it's not a flat frog, it's just running away very quickly to the anti-drain, and again, you don't get enough inflation. And so you have to tune those parameters to flatten the froth. Here is, once you do that, that's what flat froth looks like. And to see how much fine tuning you need, you could take one of these parameters, such as you can choose any parameter you want, but for instance, if you take brain or anti-brain contribution and tune it away from, well, tune it into some small range of parameters, how much inflation do you get? Here's the plot. You get 40 folds up to 160 folds, but only over this very narrow range of parameters, which is something like several parts in 3,000. So you need something like part in 1,000 fine-tuning to get enough inflation. And that's worse than what was estimated by McNeil and MT, who didn't do as detailed an analysis as we're doing here, because we're really doing the exact numerical evolution of the fields for this potential. Well, so that's disappointing, and one would like to solve that problem, but we haven't solved it in this paper. And instead, what we've done is to say, well, let's just live with this for the moment and ask, is there anything distinctive coming out of this scenario that would distinguish it from some others?
I mean, one part in 1,000. A lot worse.
That's not like one part in 10 to 100 or something, which is what other models do, right? You know, from the perspective of cosmology, one part in 1,000 sounds not bad. Maybe I'm missing something here, but it seems to me to do a whole lot worse.
They
read and want to do better, I know, but
yeah.
I mean, really, is this, how terrible is this?
Well, for instance, I don't think there's a strong anthropic argument as to why we should have as much inflation as we deserve, so I can't fall back on that probably to explain it. I find it
anthropic argument.
Does this curve blow up? It goes too far. It's too big.
Well, I haven't shown the part which, if I go farther out, then it will start blowing up again because of distance. And so,
no, I get your curve, E moment versus K.
If I keep tuning things, I can make this arbitrarily flat. Eventually, it will turn up again, and then it would get stuck in the local minimum already. It would inflate forever. So, yeah.
But it's very close to the edge there, 0.01 or 0.3001, where it actually diverges in your stuff.
Yeah, we start diverging very, very close. Okay, we're at the bottom.
And can you tell me something about the initial conditions?
I forgot to mention that. So that's at least one nice thing, you don't have to assume the initial conditions. Like, here I was starting with various initial conditions, sometimes way up on this hill, sometimes on the other side of it, but that's steep, so sigma will always roll to its minimum very quickly, and settle down. The place lasts long enough if you quite get sensitive to variations in initial conditions.
And when I fall on the first gear, you go to zero.
Yeah, well, here we're falling through V equals zero, which is not good, but we also don't really trust this form when we get too close to the anti-grade. And so, just assuming that the car potential is valid for some reason where inflation is still happening and it's no longer trustworthy when in certain forms.
Well, if I remove the anti-grade at the tip and your mobile uses the grade, it would be minimum customer surrender flat for an initial state.
If I move the anti-degree
yeah, and like from, if I don't know the details of the potential, I can still say, you know, these two elements in the intersection are annihilated. And so what's left over, is it flat space or is it, you know, or I have three of you, a small file of the line of the concept.
What's going to happen is that this term plus all of this gets multiplied by the same. So here's these coming from the anti-D figure, at least these basically have to cancel each other out once you have a violation. Which, well, that wouldn't be good. I think you have, because this minimum would always be negative. I think what you would need to have is at least two anti-grades, so that you would still have the possibility to move this up from ADS to score.
Which of these terms comes from the Brayer mode of work, but the Brayer mode does not play any role in this computation?
Which was one?
The blowing up mode.
Oh, yeah, so as I said, in the end, the blowing up mode it actually had very little effect because it turns out that it gets a big mass from this potential. And so the only thing it adds is this E term. It gets a bit. So there's a constant shift in potential that's coming from this. It wasn't present in the element. And it turns out that we could never make it large compared to the shift that we were already getting from the anti-degree brain. This is just something which is comparable to other pieces in our potential. So that's why I say it didn't make a qualitative change to the results. Did that answer the question? So, when we try to pitch this model against the data, the question is, could we find any interesting features in the acoustic peaks of the CMB? So that's the question that I focused on in this work. So we would like to make contact with this data summarizing. These are the multifold moments of the temperature and isotropy. Okay. The low moments are coming from, so what we're seeing here are really only 10 e-foldings of inflation, which were happening. In the last 60 e-folds of inflation, we saw the first 10 of those that were showing up in the CMP. And then 50 or so ecolabs that came after that are responsible for structures which are higher multiples, smaller angular skins. And the connection between inflation in that picture is the power spectrum of the density perturbations. And that's related to the Hubble parameter and how fast it's rolling. And it's parameterized as power law, the wave number. Wave number is a power which conventionally is spectral index is equal to 1. That means there is no dependence. That's the flat spectrum, which is the hallmark prediction of inflation. So we are able to compute this. We get an inflationary model, and then one has to, somebody has to plug that into a Boltzmann like CMB fast to compute what that translates into the temperature on that socket piece. So here is an example of the typical output from this model for the deviation of the spectral index from 1. So flat spectrum would have just been sitting here at 0. This is plotted as a function of the number of e-foldings, and in this case I'm looking at the number of e-foldings starting 60 before the end of inflation. So here is a model where we had 90 e-foldings total, and we're seeing 30 and 40 would be looking. So you see here, we do have a significant deviation in the spectral index of blue, 0, and also it's running, it's not constant. So that's a generic prediction of this rolling down this trough that I showed you. And to compare to the experimental constraints, here is what WMAP, the original paper, showed. They gave constraints on the evolution of spectral index function wave number, n is just proportional to the log of the wave number, so these are really comparable graphs. And you can see in this picture, there is a lot of experimental leeway to accommodate small deviation that I'm showing you here. And it's interesting that there's a hint for running in the data that was perfectly flat, still allowed by the data, but there's a suggestion of running there. So it's interesting to see if you can get a large enough running from the theory to be comparable to accessibility of future experiments.
Exactly. You always get a new wave running?
Yeah, I think that's typical of what you would call. Well, okay, so that's only due to the second derivative of the potential. So, pretty much any time you have potential with this curve like that, you get negative. Some relation to the derivatives.
Is your hint there? Is that still true? I thought people were less of your.
Well, I'll show you. Okay, that's what I'm coming to. Okay. Here is the situation. Last almost this was combining map data with the Sloan Digital Sky Survey. That's the probability of the distribution function for the running, which you see it's still quite consistent with 0, but the central value is quite negative. And in conventional inflation models, you would never expect to get such a large volume running, because typically if you had 60 e-foldings, when it was going to be like over 60 squared or something. So it's really not expected. And therefore, if you found it, it would be very well, it's displaced in here. I mean, there's very little curvature in that. So I'm not going to worry about the length of the line. I'm going to show you in a moment that this has been tightened up a little bit, but just to compare to what's going on in our predictions, if you plotted the spectral index of the whole history of inflation, that's what this random curve is showing. It's n minus 1 divided by 10. So n minus 1 is like 0.4. Down to minus 0.4 scale, but all this real inflation. And we're just looking at this small here. And the running is plotted in this black curve. It's almost always negative, but it's positive here. But the point of this curve is that if you wanted to be at a spectral index that was closer to 1, across 0, or running that's closer to 0, basically you just have to tune parameters so that inflation lasts longer, and then 60 e-foldings before the end of inflation could be in this middle section instead of over here for a bit more interesting deviations. So unfortunately, it's always possible to wriggle out if the observations rule out such large deviations. I can do more fine-tuning than with this regime. But if we do see big deviations, that will be interesting, and I think it will be telling us that inflation didn't last much longer than 16 years. Now, things have tightened up a little bit. There was another paper using Lyman alpha data from Sloan, and that claims that the spectral index is constrained to be much closer to 1. And so that would actually be putting considerable pressure on a model that predicts 1.05, even. That would be quite a few standard deviations out. That's probably. If you allow for running, then this constraint gets relaxed. So here's where you have to be in the plane of spectral index versus running. And that was before they added the Lyman alpha data. Now with Lyman alpha, we're getting this region. So that, see, the running can still be, well, it can't be minus 0.1 anymore. That. Whereas the spectral index, that could be still as low as 0.95, getting close to 1.5. Whenever you add more parameters, you risk expanding some of the parameters that you already have. And well, this is actually repeating here what I said before, the fact that more strongly you can say spectral index be close to 1, more strongly you rule out that inflation was only the minimal 60 e-foldings, because whenever you have minimal duration of inflation, you get just an interesting deviation, flatness, from the onset of inflation, where the potential is not flat everywhere, it's flattest in the middle. And so the place where you're beginning or ending, which is larger deviations of flatness. But This is just to say, you can also open up a hole in the trough for some of the values and parameters in the fund. Partly heterogeneous and partly grain separation. And if you have an inflaton that has two components, that could show up as isocurvature fluctuations. So that would be another distinctive signature for inflation. And another interesting thing about these kinds of trajectories is that they can give you more erratic looking deviations of the spectral index from one of the bumps to wiggles. So if you see interesting features in the CLs, then you might start looking for some peculiar intentions like this. In this model, so one other thing that you can try and get a handle on is the string scale, because amplitude of fluctuations is related to the scale of potential related to the string scale, and by fitting that amplitude, you get some estimate string scale. Our model, is something of this order. And that's interesting, or maybe it's interesting, because it's just on the borderline of giving you gravity wave contribution to the CMP. And this is the gravity wave contribution, while it's characterized by this ratio of tensor to scalar perturbations. Currently, it's very weakly limited, but these gravity waves, their strength is proportional to the fourth power of this inflation scale. So right now, we know that the scale of inflation is less than that scale. And we'd like to get down to something like what this model is predicting, which actually requires a huge increase in sensitivity. And this is showing you, this is the level of temperature fluctuations. And here is the gravity wave contribution. Assuming R of 10 to minus 3. So we need something even smaller than that. It's a huge increase in sensitivity. Fourier has projected that if you do all kinds of theoretical tricks on cleaning up the data and using weak cleansing, you might be able to get down to this limit, around 10 to 15 GeV. So maybe in 10 years, we'll be able to tell whether something like this is giving gravity or contributions.
So the idea here is you're forming a cotton string with these colors?
No. So you're thinking about gravity waves that release so it would speed through cusps radiating gravity.
You had string, you didn't say the word cosmic string.
Okay. There's always a tensor contribution to the temperature anisotropy, whether you add cosmic strings or not.
Okay.
And that is just, that just depends on the Hubble parameter of inflation. It doesn't depend on the flatness of the potential, but it's sensitive to the magnitude of inflation. So, and the way that shows up is, as you see here, it's a contribution to the total. So this is the contribution to the temperature anisotropy coming from the gravity waves.
Oh, okay.
And it's showing up at low L. And it tends to push it up at low L. So, and then there are degeneracies. You have to break degeneracies in the data to be consistent with this parameter. Because there are other things which can also push up the TC correlations at low L. But assuming that you can do all those things, then you start to become sensitive to that. Okay.
car and then just that hopeless.
It's just the ratio of the tensor to the scalar. So right now the limit is something much closer to here. So I want to mention briefly a variation on this theme, which we call racetrack inflation. And it's inspired by the same setup, that it's way simpler because it takes the free grain totally out of the picture. And now instead of getting inflation from grain, anti-grain annihilation, we're getting it from the Taylor modulus itself, which, I remind you, it's a complex field. Before I said, before the imaginary part is got such a mass, turns out it's possible to tune parameters so that there's a flat spot, the potential for the field by itself. And it requires complicating potential a little bit. Instead of just having a single exponential coming from condensation of a simple gauge group, if you have a product gauge group, you're going to need more compensation. Then for each product, you get another exponential contribution to the superpotential. And those are related to the gauge groups. We still need the anti-grain piece, but when you put it all together, you have the same form of the potential, just with slightly more complicated superpotential. And also this constant piece is going from the TTP to the flux compact location components. So it turns out if you have some very good graduate students who are able to cleverly scan parameter space, oh, and here's what this potential looks like when I'm using X applying the real imaginary parts of the modules. It's about to degenerate. Well, whenever you have such a potential, there's always the possibility of internal inflation where one part of the universe is in one of these vacua, the other parts in the other vacua, in the middle you have some domain wall. It can be shown that if the potential is flat enough, that means the domain wall is very thick, so thick that it's actually inflating. If you live somewhere in that domain wall, not precisely in the center, but somewhere corresponding to on the side, then what you will see is inflation going on in your little patch of the universe. And you will see the field is rolling down. But this is interesting because once you have such a potential, it guarantees that there will always be somewhere in the universe where this kind of inflation is happening. And you just had to be lucky enough to be close enough to the top or close enough to the center of the main wall to experience that, which that's called topological inflation. And it's nice because in a way it solves the problem of initial conditions. You know that you always exist in places where conditions come up. And so it's possible to get that in this model and to bring this and so what you have at that center of this the saddle point, you have the real part that's stable, but the imaginary part, this axion, wants to fall down. And if you tune parameters carefully enough, you can get inflation from this. Here's an example. You have to tune this constant superpotential to, again, something like a part in 2000.
That's correct.
So that's kind of interesting. So I think we chose those in order to get certification of large volumes of modern volume of the build constantly moving up a little for everything makes a nice theoretical control. We have been willing to give that up with a smaller rank of information. So just one thing about this model. Here's what the spectral index looks like as a function of E foldings, and here's where we have to be living. And it turns out it's a very robust prediction of this model. You're always, because the shape of that potential seems to be very somehow robust, we predict that the spectral index is always going to be around 0.95. So it's 1 minus 0.05. And just to remind you, I think you have to be sitting on the edge of this mild region. So it's interesting that data is starting to put pressure on at least one prediction of a model where we can't predict all the problems. It's we get a little balance. Turns out the scale of inflation is too small to give us observable gravity limits. Now, actually, ending. So do I have 5 minutes? Okay, a lot of information. The last thing I wanted to mention was the problem of repeating. Actually, in the model I just mentioned, it's not a problem because if you assume that the standard model is living on one of the B7 ranges given for QKP, then the Kaling modulus is real imaginary parts couples to gauge fields in this manner. And at the bottom of the potential, both of these fields are oscillating around. And so those oscillations will excite the gauge fields and will give you repeating in the usual sense. And that works because we're not trying to do grain anti-grain inflation. But if you go back to grain anti-grain inflation, the problem of repeating is not so obvious. And that's because the endpoint of the annihilation is described by this peculiar tachyonic field theory used to set, where the whole action, which is a Ragmore infill type, one for each of the grains, that whole thing is multiplied by an exponential potential. Now T is the tachyon field, it's not the other modulus. So you have this picture where, let me contrast this to hybrid inflation. In hybrid inflation, you have your inflaton rolling down, and then at some point, its mass square goes negative, and it moves off. Not its mass square. There's another field, let's call it phi, whose mass square is positive while the inflaton has large values. The inflaton rolls down, and then the mass of phi square changes sign. Then you roll off in the phi direction, and you get reheating from the oscillations of phi. Well, a similar thing is happening with grain anti-grain inflation. You have this tachyonic mode, which is not tachyonic when separation is big enough, but at some critical separation, it goes, mass square goes negative, you get the tachyon. But unlike hybrid inflation, the potential for that tachyon is this pure exponential. And so it just goes rolling off to infinity, and there's no oscillations. For that reason, we don't get efficient repeating in the same way as conventional inflation, where oscillations are very efficient and exciting, so field is couples. The smooth evolution of the tachyon field would not be very efficient. It's more like a gravitational particle production. And then there's the question of what does it decay into? The generic expectation is that it's just going to decay into closed stream ones, into gravitons. And then you have to worry, how are you going to get that to excite the standard model photons. We don't want a universe where we just heated up the gravitons. We never had photons. That leads to the binary universe. So I just want to mention a kind of speculative idea that I've been working on for a couple of years, how that might be solved. And this is a little bit related to the idea of cosmic strings forming at the end of inflation, except our cosmic strings, we want them living in the compact dimensions. In fact, let me just make this picture. And the idea is you would need to have 5-grain and anti-5-grain annihilating. Whenever you have such annihilation, there's a possibility to form codimensional 2 defects of the tachyon field. Now, in conventional grain anti-grain inflation with 3 grains, these defects look like cosmic strings extended in the 3 dimensions. So those are the kind that Rob Myers, Copeland, and Polchinski have been talking about. But what we're here proposing is that defect is localized in the 2 extra dimensions, and it's and that defect then itself would be a 3-grain. And it's known that these vortices actually do have all the exact properties, the right tension, the right charge, to really be bona fide 3-grains. So the picture is that we can have lots of these grains and anti-grains forming at the end of inflation, and one of them, if you can find some way to keep them from all annihilating each other, one of them could be a standard model. And because there are gauge fields that live on the original grains, coupling to this tachyonic background. This tachyonic background is becoming singular in the condensation. You can have very strong particle production of matter flying to those grains, including photons. And I won't go into the details, but we've done a quantitative calculation of particle production on those defects as they're forming, and try to estimate the efficiency of heating, where it's 100% efficiency, as a function of parameters like the size of the extra dimensions. So we find reasonable values of the parameters where you could get 100% efficiency if you ignore the back reaction of the tachyon. So this seems like it's a nice possibility for beginning. Somebody would just invent a grain anti-grain inflation scenario to use 5-grains. So that's all I wanted to say, and the final message is that I think it's very interesting that some of these spinny inflation models are actually starting to come under pressure from the data. I think it's unfortunate, though, that we still have a serious fine-tuning problem, and so that's something that I'm very interested in trying to solve. But the good side of that is that I think it's a hint that inflation didn't last for thousands and thousands of deep foldings, because the less tuning you have, the shorter the duration of inflation. And that gives you the possibility of interesting deviations from a flat spectral flux. So I'm really hoping that in the next round of CMD experiments, we're actually going to see something like that, which will be the first chance that perhaps we have a short period of inflation, and not so much fine-tuning, and the possibility to see some distinctive features that would distinguish one model from another, including string theoretic models. Thank you very much.
So in case of the tachyon potential of the grain anti-grain, there is a choice of the field redefinition which makes the minimum, which takes the minimum of the tackling tension to finite distances.
Yeah.
This is what is used in the open string field theory, as against the boundary string field theory, the tension for which you have, you get your tension in fact and minimum runs up to things. So why don't you use the, you know, definition of the tackling extension, which is get from the string field theory, or things like.
Well, you can use whatever choice of fields you want. I think the one that you're talking about, the kinetic term, gets modified in a funny way such that it's still, it won't oscillate, it's still asymptotically approach that thing. And there's still, so it's shown that there are no excitations of that. So there's no actual particle that could be associated with oscillations. I think it doesn't matter which choice of fields. The one that gives you the monotonic potential, I think it's one of the more conventional kinetic terms. It shouldn't matter.
Yeah, it's so good. I'm sorry, I'm getting used to it. It's for the prediction of the spectrum effect for the attack on.
You mean for the particles?
Yeah.
This is, we did prediction for the spectrum, which is not shown here, they're in our paper. And actually, that spectrum, it's, there is an ultraviolet divergence there, which is also seen in purely string theoretic calculations of particle production. So, in fact, one of the parameters we introduce is an ultraviolet effect. There's an ultraviolet cutoff. Again, for the light, and we take it to something on the order of the string scale. So actually, there's room for better understanding of that problem. But since the ultraviolet divergence happens in string theory too, I don't see how it relates to it.
And so, if I'm understanding this correctly, it's better reason to use a smaller number.
Epsilon was, we put a cutoff of the size of the vortex, the minimum size of the vortex. We got a divergence as the vortex collapsed to zero size, so that's epsilon. And the smaller, you let it collapse more far into the direction, which makes sense. And I don't want to do this. I can tell you about that.
Is there a natural size for the cutoff?
Well, we just assumed it was a order of the string scale, and we allowed it to vary to some reasonable range around the string scale. But yeah, that's something which is not quite rigorous.
Fair enough, fair enough. Questions? Thank you.
I just
want to remind everybody, Minami is leading a group discussion on black hole entropy today at 2 o'clock in June.